Sex, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the speculative interdimensional vehicle, Sex in Space. Its mission, to explore new points of view, to seek out fresh opinions, to boldly go where so many have gone before, and still somehow manage to totally miss the point. Subscribe to Sex in Space, wherever quality podcasts are found.
Hi there, and welcome back to Sex in Space. My name's Toshi, and we're delighted to have you joining us today for another podcast episode. For today's episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Damien Witherold. We came across Damien on Instagram when we asked our followers which topics they'd like to hear us discuss on the podcast. Damien approached us and said that he would love to speak with us about sex and disability, and we were super keen to have this conversation with him. Damien is an avid gig-goer to live music, sport, comedy, theatre, and travel. He's a disability advocate and inclusivity consultant, a sex educator, and a sex toy guru. He goes by the awesome username of Wheelie Rocking Pink on Instagram if you'd like to check him out. All right, let's get into it. Welcome, Damien. Thank you so much for being with us here today on the Sex in Space podcast. We're very excited to have you and to talk to you more about sex and disability. We were really thrilled when you reached out to us about wanting to talk to us more about this. So I thought in light of that, a good place to start is if we could ask you to share a bit more about your personal experience with disability.
Hi. So, yeah, thank you for having me. My experience is I have a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder, and I have other conditions that go alongside that. I'm a wheelchair user. I'm very known for my wheelchair because you can find me on Instagram at Wheelie Rocking Pink, because before I went in my wheelchair, I always wore pink shoes for many years. Obviously, when I had to go in the wheelchair, it had to be bright pink. So that is kind of what it's kind of become my brand, what people know me for. I was diagnosed when I was 14 years old. So it's been a progressive downhill from there. But I've just kind of learned to live with it. Yes, some days are really bad. Some days it can get you down. But I've kind of embraced what comes with my disability. And I think this is where I've led into the advocacy more now as well. Growing up, it was really hard. At 14, being told you've got a condition that's going to affect you for the rest of your life. Mm. It's not the best of outcomes. It can really play with your mental health and things like that. And I got into a really bad headspace in my late teens dealing with it. But then I saw a better way of dealing with it was just to embrace it a bit more. And then mid-20s, I struggled with that again. But once I got to my 30s, then I was like, right, let's go for it. We'll just deal with what life gives me. And that's how I kind of embrace life now. It's something that is there, but it doesn't stop me doing the things I love most of the time. Yes, there'll be always things that does stop me doing, but you've got to just cope with what you've got in some respects, and you just got to embrace it.
It's a great mindset and attitude to have towards life in general, I think, being so like just willing to just take it as it comes and work with it. Can you talk to us about how you got into the advocacy space?
It's a complicated story in one respect.
Okay.
So how I got into the sex education start would go back to 2004 when I started my own sex toy business. So that was I fell into that by mistake. And I often get asked this question, why, how did I end up in the sex toy industry? And it all started with a rubber duck. I'd had a bad spell of health. Not long after I'd finished university. I was at university. I did a degree in criminology, which sounds weird to what I do now. And when I had the bad spell of health, I need to do something that's a bit easier on me, less stress. And I started a website up selling gadgets and gifts and that sort of thing. Within 6 months, I went to a trade fair in the UK and I went past this stand and they had vibrating rubber ducks. And then talking to the lads on the stand, they were like, oh, these are sex toys. tell me what they were. And I'm like, oh, if you want to see something a bit more risque, we'll show you behind like the curtain, so to speak. So I saw all these other sex ties. And like going back to like 2004, it was kind of early days where it really started to change into what it is now in that industry, in my opinion. And I was like, oh, I really like the idea of this. And so I started selling the rubber ducks and a few other sex toys to start with. And then I realized, yeah, I want to do this more. So I then focused on selling sex toys. And it was within, I would say, 18 months of starting the business, I realized a lot of the toys weren't accessible to me as someone who has dexterity issues or has problems with like joints dislocating and things like that. I was like, I can't use all of these. Mm. So I started looking for products that were accessible for disabled people. And then I really concentrated on this, and I would speak to companies all the time, say, look, products aren't accessible. I need more stuff like this. And I've scoured like the globe looking for different products. And then COVID hit, and I was like, business was brilliant. Like, because people were staying at home, they didn't have much else to do. It's like top of the agenda. So business was really good. But I found COVID hard in the sense of, because things had been taken away that I did to relax and to help with my anxieties and depression, which was going to music gigs and things like that. Mm. I found I needed a niche that needed itching. And I was like, what am I going to do? So I thought, I need to do something to help more people in my situation. And I started working with a charity in the UK who talked more about sex and disability. And then I realized I wanted to do more. So then I thought, right, I'm going to qualify as a sex educator, because I was talking to so many people who'd had no sex education, especially around their disabilities, and I was talking to people who acquired disabilities and had no idea how that was going to affect their sex lives. So I thought, there's a space that I want to look into. And that's when I kind of thought, right, let's do the education. I've done my qualifications and I keep wanting to learn. So I keep doing different courses to see what else I can broaden my horizons with. And then I started doing work with different people, such as the Pleasure Project and other charities, where I can just talk about sex and disability, because it's something, in my opinion, is the one of the last big taboos. We don't hear much about sex and disability. It's just because you don't see it in the mainstream. You don't see many people talking about it. I think it's still something a lot of able-bodied people look at and think, disabled people don't have sex. But yes, disabled people do have sex. They have great sex. In my opinion, a lot of disabled people have better sex because they have to think about it more.
Mm, that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, because, so I use myself as an example. I have to be very careful about what positions my wife and I use and things like that, because I can easily dislocate a hip, a shoulder, a knee, anything, like most of my joints dislocate. So I have to be very careful about what I'm doing. And so you have to sometimes just think that little bit more. You have to have more conversations. You have to be willing to laugh when something goes wrong. I think it gives a higher rate of pleasure in some respects, because you've got to take into consideration both partners. And if both partners are disabled, then they've got to take even more into consideration. And I think because there's more conversations that go on, it gives that, for me, a better sex life.
It's that communication thing, isn't it? Because it's one of those things that, I mean, in sex ed, I was never taught how to communicate in sex, and I don't know what it's like for anybody else out there. But, you know, that's one of the key things that makes a difference between a bad experience, an average experience, and a good experience, and a great experience, is talking and communicating with your partner.
Yeah. My sex education was non-existent. It was terrible. I think condom on a banana, that was it. I think I learned most of my stuff from lads mags in the 90s. And that wasn't probably the best place, but that was what was available. Mm. It was before porn became as big as it is and easy to get hold of now. Mm. And I think this is a big problem. There's the younger generations have got so much access to pornography, stuff on social media, that I think the art of communication is getting lost as well. I think I think as a society, we've lost the way to talk, where to communicate, where to like kind of debate things. There's so much we've lost because I think of technology. Technology has given us so much good stuff, but it's taken certain things away. Technology has, like, it's changed everything. Like, it's changed the sex toy industry. It's changed sex education. It's changed dating. Technology and sex toys has made such a difference because it's made certain products more accessible because of, like, for example, Bluetooth technology. They don't have to try and hold a remote control. They can use their phones. There's little nuances that technology will improve people's sex lives. But I do think we need to learn to talk more as well.
Definitely.
We need to take it back to basics.
Yes. It's interesting that we don't start with the basics, really, because you would think we would start with communication.
Yeah, and I think this is something that needs teaching more. I especially think to young men it needs teaching more, because they don't know how to communicate because of they're used to WhatsApping and Snapchatting. They don't know how to have a proper conversation. But I think that's where the whole thing of consent comes in. If we teach it at an early age and try and get rid of some of this toxic masculinity that is out there, it can only improve future generations. I think there's lost generations now because of technology, where it's hard to try and like show what is wrong with some of the stuff that is in the media, i.e. like Andrew Tate and things like that. We need to bring it back to very basic having conversational skills, realizing that everyone doesn't agree, and especially like the difference in trying to communicate with the opposite sex, for example. I think that a lot of young men just don't know how to do it. I've done classes and it's like they are, especially some of the adults I have done sessions with learning disabilities, it's really hard to try and show how easy it is to read someone wrong, for example, because of you can't always... if someone's neurodiverse, you don't always know that someone's flirting with you, for example, and you might read that the wrong way. So we've got to try and teach this. And I think this is why sex education in SEN schools is so important, because there's a lot of young adults there who might have learning disabilities or physical disabilities who are struggling in the wider world because they haven't been given the basic skills of communication, especially around the topic of sex.
Can you tell us about what you find most rewarding about working in those spaces and bringing sex education to those areas?
Nothing beats getting an email or having a conversation from someone and them telling you that you've had an impact on their sex life. I had a call with someone recently. They had acquired a spinal cord injury. They'd been basically not given any advice about how their sex life was going to be affected, and they just needed some advice. And within a month, 2 months, they're then telling me the conversation I'd had completely changed their lives. So it's things like that. And I think it's getting out of that mindset that sex always means penis and vagina, or, you know, it doesn't always mean intercourse. And it's looking about how you can change that mindset. I think that goes for everyone, though. I think there's too much focus sometimes now on actual intercourse. Not talk about foreplay. We don't talk about even just holding hands and kissing and intimacy. We don't take things back to basics anymore.
Yeah, it's that whole back to basics thing, and it's broadening it out and looking at what does this word sex actually mean. I mean, we've kind of been, I guess, fed one definition, but really it's such an all-encompassing word that has so many different meanings and ways that you can interpret it and express it.
Yeah, because for some people with certain disabilities, they may not be able to feel touch as much, or they might have certain senses that are maybe hypersensitized and things like that. So it's having them conversations to realize what works for that person and trying to encourage them not to be upset if they can't potentially have like physical sexual intercourse. Tell them about, like, you might just be wanting someone who wants a cuddle. Like, you know, there's nothing but such an endorphin hit having a hug. And that can make a difference for someone. So I think it's trying to teach them that start small and then see how far you can go in a safe way. And then that's where I really love to help people is with products. I love to tell what sex toy products there is. I would always call it a pleasure product because for me, it's something that gives pleasure. And it can be, for example, someone in a wheelchair, if they want to try bondage, for example, I try to tell them to start slow, take themselves to the wheelchair, let their partner take a bit of control, or take something in, for example, if it's someone who has a condition where they struggle, like physically turning themselves over, you look at something different. So look at a spreader bar, for example, because that means your partner can safely turn you over when you're having sex and things like that. So thinking outside the box, it's not always, a product isn't always useful where it's meant to be. But like positional play can be done very well with, like, for example, a liberator wedge, like sex furniture. I don't know if you know what I mean. So liberator furniture is all very soft play. It's a term I find weird using with sex, but it's soft play furniture, and it's brilliant for people with disabilities because it can help them get in positions that they might not be able to get into normally. So it's amazing. I love just recommending products that I know will change someone's life. But I have now edged away from the retail side, and I spend most of my time now helping companies make their products more accessible, and I do more advocacy work because I get more out of it. And I think there's such an amount of work to be done in that area.
Is there anything in particular that you've found to be quite challenging in that area of work?
It's getting companies to realize that the market for sex and disability is so huge and realize that just changing maybe a couple of small things on their product can mean it's marketable to even more people. And I think sometimes a company will see, I'll come talk to them and say, right, if you do this and do this, it'll make it more marketable. But sometimes I think they look at the cost and think, is it worth it just for that market? And this is why the disabled sector gets left out in so many industries, because they're not willing to spend that time and money to invest in that, in the community, really. And that was one of the things I loved about retail. I could adapt my pricing, for example, to help more people. It wasn't maybe the best from a business perspective, but I always wanted to help more people have and enjoy a pleasurable sex life, because we all deserve pleasure, like sexual pleasure. And I think if we can help people do it, why shouldn't we? But, and I understand, like you said, from a business perspective, you've got to think of costs and things like that. Sometimes we've got to ignore that and think of how many people we can help, because again, it has such a positive impact on society. If we, going back to the sex education, if we start earlier and teach more young people self-worth and what sex can mean, rather than thinking it's just an act, and what and like how much it can make you feel so much better about yourself, I think can only have a really good effect on society. But we don't do it. We, you know, sex is still seen as a taboo in certain areas. And like I said, disability for me, sex and disability is such a taboo. If we break it down, we can stop these horrendous stereotypes. And that's what we need to do.
I think that's the thing is, at, in sex education, we're taught about, you know, how to do it and the workings of it, but it's not how to talk about it or talk with a partner about it, about what you like, about what you don't like. And so we know how it works, but we can't speak about it. So we've got all this knowledge in our heads and we're not having the conversations around it.
Well, we don't talk about it being for pleasure either. That for me is such... one of the things I got involved with the Pleasure Project for was they want to talk about pleasure-based sexual health. And that for me is such a big thing, because that is what sex is about. We do it for pleasure. Yes, we do it to make babies and make the next generation, but most of us do it for pleasure.
Yeah.
You know, same with masturbation. We don't talk about that being for pleasure and what that can do for you, for example, you know, helping with stress and anxiety. Mm. So I do feel we should talk about it more. And I know it's very controversial saying we want to talk about these things in to like younger people, but it's what needs to be done. And yes, we've got to be age appropriate.
Yeah.
But we've got to remember now, 12, 13-year-olds, even younger, are seeing hardcore pornography on their phones.
Mm.
We need to kind of cut that off and teach good sex education before they get hold of that.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you wish, or is there something that you wish you'd known earlier about disability and pleasure?
So like I said, my sex education was non-existent.
Mm.
I wish I'd been taught at an earlier age that I would have to think about things maybe differently. I kind of had to explore that myself.
Mm.
And I wasn't kind of maybe aware that I would probably hurt myself at times, which I've done, and not realised that I would have to find a way of navigating mentally how I dealt with that.
Mm.
Well, then I wish like 16-year-old me knew how much sexual pleasure would help me deal with some of the pain and the anxiety as well, because having a loving sexual relationship is the best thing you can have. Mm. And it is, for want of a word, it is life-changing. It can make your whole life better, because you're not kind of sat thinking, can't do that, and I can't do that. It's like a lot of things in life. If you can't do something, it then starts breeding more negativity.
Mm.
So I think realizing how much being to have a good sex life and how much sex and pleasure can play in mental health, I think that's something I wish I'd known at an earlier age as well. I always get asked quite often about advice I would give, and I always say, learn to laugh. And laugh and communicate are the two things I will always say. And I think that is something I wish I'd known younger, because the first time I dislocated a joint during sex with my partner, I was mortified. I was like, oh my God, look what's happened. Then we just started laughing. And that was the best thing that could have happened.
Mm.
I was panicking in my head going, oh my God. And then it was like, we just laughed. And that's the way we kind of get through life sometimes. You just gotta laugh at it.
I think that's really lovely. And I was actually gonna move into the next space, which was porn.
Because
you mentioned that porn and the lack of disabled representation is something that's of interest to you. So I thought maybe I would start by asking about what your view is of pornography.
I think pornography has its place. There's some really good pornography out there. So I love talking about pornography and the effect, like it has its place. I think the problem is teenagers are consuming it far too early in, like, you know, with hardcore pornography. I think we need to find more ethical pornography, in my opinion. The sites that I think do it really well, Lustry, Get Cheeks. My favorite is Make Love Not Porn.
Mm.
I love the real world sex element of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a place for what you would see on the mainstream site, but I think that is for adults. You know, youngsters shouldn't be consuming it. And I think that's where we have a problem, where I think some of the stuff, for example, on Make Love Not Porn and Lustry, potentially something. Yeah, teenagers shouldn't be seen hardcore, but I think something like that can show what real life sex is about, show emotion, for example. And that's what the mainstream porn doesn't show. Okay. I have a slight issue with free use porn, for example, because I think when you try to teach young men, especially about consent, I think it blurs the lines a little bit. It's things like that I think we need to try and educate more about. Mm. And especially educate teenagers to say, look, this is not real when they're looking at a lot of the mainstream stuff. And then potentially show them something that is ethical, once they get to an age of like 16, 17, sure, I know they're going to have already seen stuff probably, but I think show them what I would class as something that is ethical, that shows what sex is all about. Show the emotion, show that it can go wrong. Show like using condoms, showing the cleaning up afterwards, things like that, I think, because you don't see that in porn. In a lot of the mainstream stuff, I think this is why a lot of young men have a really bad idea of what sex is about.
What kind of issues are you sort of finding in your sex education work around pornography?
One of the things I hear all the time, this is one of my other issues with a lot of mainstream pornography, is the lack of representation of disability. Really, like, it's only ever really been fetishized. So, for example, you know, you might have a character in a wheelchair, for example, who can't do something, and it'll be well over the top fetishization of like doctors and nurses, things like that. You don't really see the, like, you know, someone in a wheelchair trying to get out of the wheelchair, getting into bed, that sort of thing. Make Love Not Porn was the first place that I saw that, and it blew my mind that there was a site out there that did it so well. And obviously with that, that is someone who's uploaded to themselves. They are willing to put themselves, that vulnerability there for you to see. And if I talk to someone who is a new wheelchair user, especially a male, I will point them to go, look, if you're willing to go and pay for it, go watch it. It can make a difference to someone to see that actual sexual representation of themselves in a way. You know, like, porn has, it's always slated, for example, for like bad body imagery and like, you know, giving girls a false expectation. And it does have its issues with that. But I also think porn sometimes can play a positive role in that, because you see girls with stretch marks, you see girls with acne and things like that. It's not as, the makeup isn't as over the top, for example, as in mainstream media. So I think that has that positive side. And I think if we can show, like I say, with more ethical porn, where you might see like someone sweating, for example, or like, you know, a queef, or even like breaking wind when they're not supposed to, things like that, to show again, someone laughing. One of the other ones that always makes me laugh, and I think it's on Make Love Not Porn, was where a camera fell on someone and the couple are just laughing. And I just thought that is so funny. Yeah, and like, again, it goes back to my thing of learning to laugh with each other. And I think that's what we, if we can see more stuff like that, I think that that can only be for the better. The over-the-top stuff has got its place as a fantasy and for couples to watch and enjoy. Someone wants to watch it on their own. You know, I think it has its place. What we need to do is educate about it more. You know, I think pornography is the easy go-to sometimes for politicians to blame on for certain things. They'll say, oh, young men are getting seen too much porn. Yeah, that is an issue, but it's not the only issue. Lack of education is the main issue. So if we talk about it, and say, do you know what? This is so unrealistic. You might as well be reading a comic book. Let's you know, let's look at something that is a bit more realistic. I think it would, again, help society.
My last question for you really is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would really love to share or speak about with us on the podcast?
One thing I like love to talk about as well is, like, the other things we need to talk about in education is taking it back to things like talking about lubricant. You know, the amount of men who won't use sex toys. Now, I think this is where I'm going to get on my, not a soapbox, but this is the one thing I love talking about, is the lack of education around men using sex toys. So, you know, Sex in the City was the big moment for sex toys for vulva owners. You know, it Anne Summers in the UK, it was all like rabbits. But there's never been that moment for men. And I have so many male friends who refuse to use sex toys, and they know what I do for a living. I've given them free ones. Oh, no, I don't want to use that. And it's weird that men don't look to, like, in pleasure that way.
Mm.
And I think we need to, again, talk about masturbation in different ways. I think because there's never been that one mainstream, like, moment, we've never seen the huge uptake in men using sex toys. And for especially for men with disabilities, it can be a massive thing because there's technology out there that they can, you know, they can have toys that interact with the pornography if they want to watch it. They can have ones that their partner can control. The technology is so good, but a lot of men are just, they have this massive stigma around them. I think it's because for many years, like, the only sex toys really for men were blow-up dolls. And then, like, a lot of men don't like using the fleshlight sort of products because it's a vulva. It's a vulva on a stick. It's just a jelly. And a lot of men don't like using them because I've had men tell me they think that they feel like they're cheating on the partner using one. And I've also seen on some, like, groups on, like, Reddit and things like that, where some women do not like their partners using them because of what it looks like. And I think it's really strange. But I think, again, it's a lack of education, but B, this is something I've worked with companies in the sex toy industry that make products for men, and this is something I've discussed, and changes are coming because it needs to be, I think we need to get away from products that men kind of look at and go, oh no, I won't use it, to something they will use and embrace using one, because why not? Technology's there, the products are there, use it rather. And I think this is, again, lack of education. You don't see very many articles about the top 10 products for men. You'll see the top 10 products for vulva owners and for women and however you want to see it worded. Very rarely see the top 10 products for men.
That's really true.
If we can break, again, that stigma down of men using sex toys, I think it can help mental health. It can help, like, men be more open with themselves. If I go out with a group of friends, like, all male, they will talk about sex, but more in a bravado way. They wouldn't say, do you know what, I've used that product and it's brilliant, because it just wouldn't happen. I do that, but not many do.
That's another message to our listeners. So to anyone at home, any men, perhaps you might feel curious enough to go and buy a sex toy and give it a go, or start doing some research about a sex toy and see what you can find. Try something different.
Yeah, there's so many out there. And you don't even have to start off with something expensive. Like, you can go from something that will cost £5 all the way to something that will cost you hundreds of pounds. Like, it depends how much you want to invest in something. But I would recommend that every man uses one at some point. It's something you can use with a partner as well.
Yeah.
You know, I love, like, saying to couples when I'm doing sex education sessions and things like that, is, like, you know, bringing toys into the relationship can really help with communication. It can help with discovering what each one likes. A lot of men just don't like the thought of bringing a product, especially for themselves, into that environment. And I think it's because mainstream media has never tackled these things. Like, if you saw a sex toy in a program, it would be probably done in a jokingly way. You don't really see it. Like, you would see someone getting the mick taken out of them because they've got a fleshlight, for example. You wouldn't see a serious conversation about it. But this goes for sex and disability. You don't see it in mainstream media. I know there was, obviously, there was the scenes in Sex Education, which was done really well, but it's not been done enough. We need to take it to that next level.
And just before we wrap up, I wondered if you could share with the listeners, if they want to find you on Instagram, they want to find you online, learn about what you do, whereabouts should they go looking for you?
So the best place to find me at the moment will be either on LinkedIn at Damien Weatherald or on Instagram at WheelieRockinPink. There is a new site coming soon, which will have more of my sex education stuff on. And I will also be launching my own podcast very shortly.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Damien, for being with us here today on the Sex and Space podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing.
We really hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to find more of Damien, you can check him out on Instagram at WheelieRockingPink. Before we sign off, we wanted to remind you about our two books that we have available, How to Talk with Your Kids About Porn and The Organ Education Forgot. These are both available as downloadable PDFs or in print, and you can head over to sexandspace.com to grab your copy. If you do, not only will you be educating yourself about a very important subject, but you'll also be supporting us and all the work that we do, so we think it's a win-win. If you'd like to support us in other ways, we'd love for you to buy some merch, which is also available on our website. We've got both mugs and t-shirts. As always, thank you so much for listening and being on this journey with us. Until next time, safe travels and see you on the next episode.